State Give and Take, I am going to interview Marty Dunlap, who is a wonderful friend of mine. So this is kind of an especially good interview for me. And Marty is a lawyer here in town, and she focuses on estate planning. So I thought it would be really good for us to talk about some of the terms that have to do with estate planning. So welcome, Marty. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm really happy to be here too, Bobby.
I know. We always want to visit, so this is our way, maybe. Okay, Marty, let's start off first with that idea of some of the terms to clarify them for people, because this is back to getting your affairs in order, if you will. Estate planning sometimes sounds funny because some people think I don't have an estate, but we all need to really think about where we leave things and how that affects the people that we leave, and getting these things in order really helps them.
Okay, that sounds great. So the first thing that you had addressed was, you know, why would a person do this? And I think, you know, probably the bottom line is, as we get older, even if we don't have a lot, I think it is very important for us to have the peace that comes with knowing I've identified things that are important to me, and when I leave, that knowledge will be passed on to those who will be paying attention to that. And even if we just have a modest amount of belongings, we can be relaxed as we go into a state where we're not paying that close of attention to material possessions. That's not the most important thing to us. But having quality of life and knowing that we can relax and sleep deeply at night, not knowing if we're going to wake up the next morning, is probably one of the best reasons to do estate planning. That being said, you know, there are, of course, two different things that people are aware of. There's the trust, usually the living trust, which is something that we create while we're alive. And then there's a will. The difference between those is wills go through probate. And probate is that the courts are involved in supervising the distribution of a person's things, what's referred to as their estate. And so the reason why people like to do trust, it's a probate avoidance device. So then you don't have to have the courts involved. It's just something that will go forward with whomever you appoint to be your successor trustee. And certainly the word implies what is the most important part of that is you appoint someone who you trust, that you know are going to carry out your wishes, they're going to do what needs to be done to move your possessions from your own estate into whoever you want to give it to without court supervision. Now, people who need a will are people, typically, they want the courts to be involved. There's going to be contention in the family. There's going to be fighting, and they just don't want the whole family to implode against each other and jeopardize their relationships. They want the courts to be the ones who are supervising it. The other reason you might use a will is if your stuff, your estate, is so modest that it can be carried out without probate. And at this point in time, if your stuff that isn't directed to a specific beneficiary, and I'll clarify that in just a minute, but if your stuff is under $166,000, then a person can do what they call a small estate administration, and the courts don't have to be involved, and whomever you have appointed to be your executor, because executors go with wills, then that person would carry that out. And they can just file what's an affidavit, which is a statement saying their stuff is only worth, you know, $125,000, and then the courts aren't involved. It doesn't have to be supervised. On the other hand, if you have more stuff, and if you also have real property, a house, land, is usually people's greatest asset. And that's been true for a long time. It's where you get into your couple hundred thousand and now $300,000-$400,000 worth of value, which of course is going to exceed that $166,000, you know, just like that. And to pass that type of possession on, it's best to do a trust. Now, I don't want to make things too complicated, but we now have in California as of 2016, and it was only going to be for 5 years, and it's been extended by 1 year, but we don't know what's going to happen. We have what we call a transfer on death deed. So you can move a piece of real property to an individual by filing a transfer on death deed while you're alive, so that that can shift also to avoid probate, but you have to specify a person. And usually it's best if there's just one person, so that there's no complications that get involved with that. But even if you had two children, you could do it that way. But we don't know what's going to happen with that type of process, but we do, it currently exists this year still in California. The other way that you can pass assets on is with a designated beneficiary. So if you had a bank account, a retirement account, a 401k, a 403b, you know, any type of specified financial asset, you can specify, I want it to go to this person. You can also say, I want to be split between five different people. You can have a contingent beneficiary. If these people are all dead, then I want to go here. So as long as you are clear about a specific person, and it can be a nonprofit also, so it doesn't have to be only a person. If you are specific about who you want to be your beneficiary for that type of liquid asset, then that also will avoid probate.
Is that with a will or a trust or both?
With either.
Okay.
Basically, those assets that have a specific beneficiary are outside of a will and they're outside of a trust. Yes.
Okay.
So the executor is connected to will.
Okay.
And the executor, for example, for that type of asset, let's say you have a retirement account or you even have a bank account and you have payable on death to Bobby Tryon, then your executor would take the death certificate to the bank or to the financial institution and say, here, this person has passed. And then that institution would then go about putting together the paperwork to then give the money to whomever is designated. Different than a trustee. A trustee is connected to a trust. And a trustee, usually people put their houses into a trust. And then if you were to lose capacity, if a person, you know, they have dementia or they have a stroke or something has limited their ability to really operate in the world and take care of their business, their successor trustee, the person whom they appoint, that person would then start paying the taxes and the property insurance and make sure that the place is maintained. And if the person is living in their home, make sure that there's assets for someone to do yard maintenance or, and you know, pay the bills, all those things. So the trustee manages all the assets in the trust. Assets that you might have while you're alive, those fall under power of attorney agent. So this is then the next person that we were going to talk about. So there's two different types of agents that get appointed. Someone for the finances and someone for healthcare. They might be the same people, but the types of skills that are important in those different types of responsibilities are different. A person who is going to be managing your money, and this could be true for the trustee as well, or an executor, or the agent with power of attorney for finances, you want it to be a person who has good attention to detail, doesn't feel uncomfortable taking care of financial matters, and has good follow through. They're not the kind of person who's going to go, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. I don't get it. I'm just going to put it aside over here and hope it takes care of itself. No, it needs to be a person who's going, okay, I know this is complicated, but I can do this. And they will take responsibility for it and follow through and deal with the details of that. So those skill sets really go with an executor, a successor trustee, and a person, an agent, who would be the power of attorney for finances.
Would they have an executor also in a trust?
Not with a trust. An executor is important, but they go with, and in this case, if you had a trust, you would also have a pour-over will.
I see.
And a pour-over will, it's almost like just a placeholder, but there's some things that you have that may not be in your trust, and your executor is the one who manages assets that are outside of the trust.
So would people normally have a trust and a will?
Always.
I see. Okay, that's a big one for me to have clear in my mind. Okay, so you've got a will and you have an executor for that will, and then you have a trust and you have some successors that are going to be your trustee or trustees.
Right. Okay. And many times, those are the same people.
Sure. Yeah.
And many times, whoever your legal representatives are, they're not really clear. Am I operating under my authorities given to me as the trustee? Or am I operating under my authority as the executor?
Sure.
The financial institution will know because they want to make sure I've got the right person. But the individual may not know. It really depends on where those assets reside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, put in there too is the power of attorney. Let's talk about those two right now in relationship to the executor and the trustee.
Okay. The power of attorney and the agent for healthcare, they are only with authority while a person is alive.
Okay. Now, and is their relationship with the trustee, can that get a little bit sticky if the person's alive?
Yeah, you know, so there's another thing I want to distinguish there, but yes, I mean, many times they're the same people.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But because you go, okay, this is the person who's best in this, and this is the person who's best in that. But one of the things that's trickiest, I think, for people to picture, and it takes a while, and that is if your assets are in the trust, then it's the successor trustee's authority to manage those assets and make sure they're safe and they're protected and they're growing and whatever it is.
We'll take a break right here. You're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. This is North State Give and Take. My name is Bobby Tryon, and you're listening to Marty Dunlap talk about estate planning. To Marty Dunlap talking about estate planning on North State Give and Take.
If the assets are outside of the trust, like people's financial retirement accounts and different types of financial investments stay outside of a trust, they can, then those assets, because they're outside of the trust, those fall under the responsibility of the power of attorney. And they need to make sure that those assets are safe and they're growing or they're, you know, protected in some way. But that person, the power of attorney, can access those when they're outside of the trust.
Okay.
Where the successor trustee can access assets that are in the trust.
Okay. Right. Right. So do a lot of people put everything in a trust and not have any assets out of the trust?
So that's an interesting thing. I think that's how it used to be. That's how people used to proceed. And I think there's still attorneys who do that. I don't, because I have observed that financial institutions can get very nervous about, are you really the successor trustee? The person's still alive? I don't know. And I mean, they can really become very picky and very cautious about allowing a person who's a successor trustee to start acting and saying, okay, I need to access this money because this person is going into, you know, assisted living and I need to make sure that I can pay for this. And so I have found that it's better leaving chunks of money to be accessible to the agent with power of attorney for finances to be more easily able to access that money, transfer it from one account to another, get the online payment for different types of entities. So I recommend that certain types of financial assets stay outside of the trust, and then the beneficiary of those assets either are the trust or specific people, and those are usually specific people if it's an pre-tax type of account. The tax consequences of giving money to a trust can be something that needs to be paid attention to. And so you have to always look at all the different assets. Or have they been taxed yet? Or mm-hmm. the tax is still being withdrawn. And in general, if taxes are still being paid, which is usually, you know, those mandatory withdrawals that people have once they reach right now at 72 because of COVID, that it goes, those types of accounts are paid directly to human beings or to a nonprofit because they won't have the types of tax consequences if they go into a trust. Assets that have already been taxed, stocks, though, or inherited money that has already been taxed, those are best to be going into the trust when the person dies. So the beneficiary is the trust.
Oh yeah, that is a tricky part of it. So
it is a tricky part.
Yeah. So, and that's all set up and stated in a trust, or where is that stated so that people know?
Well, I mean, usually, you know, when you're doing your estate planning, the person that you're working with will look at your assets and go, okay, this mm-hmm. should go this way and this should go awesome. That way. I don't believe in the blanket, okay, everything goes into the trust. I mean, that's yeah. what they used to do in the 70s and the 80s, even the 90s. And I know even people now still do it. And it's like, okay, but that's not necessarily the approach that I take. But I always have, you know, each individual, each client mm-hmm. is different. You got to look at the whole layout. You want to make sure that there's enough money because for two reasons, and you made a very good point, and that is if all the money goes directly to people, wait a second, you got to make sure there's money for the trustee to fix up the house, to sell it. You know, so there's different things that you want to make sure are going to occur. And so there's not any real simple, oh, I always do it this way. It's like, well, let's yeah. really look carefully at what your assets are and what the status is of those different assets and then make that decision.
That's the planning part.
That's the plan. Exactly. I like that. That's exactly right. Now, the yeah. other thing that you asked about is, could there ever be a conflict between these different people? And I always see, you know, I always pay attention to that too, because you don't want to get into a power play like, well, I'm not going to free up this money to be able to pay for this person. And this many times might happen with a blended family with different roles. I don't want to sell the house so that you have the money that you can then pay for this person to be in assisted living, which, you know, is a big drawdown. Well, all the assets should be always used on the behalf of the person whose money it is. But you want to make sure that there's a real smoothness in the flow of money so that it can be used for the what we call either the trustor or the settlor. But the person who is setting up the trust or has the estate, you want to make sure that those assets are available for their use and there isn't any way, no, I'm not going to let go of this, you know. So that's one more thing about the planning part, is to make sure that there's not going to be any conflicts set up that, you know, people might be kind of operating in a different way that could sure. interfere with the care of the person who has set up this initially. Yeah.
And does this happen sometimes? I'm sure it does. So the person's going along and they have done no estate planning. Okay, so the family says, hey, we need to do some planning. that can happen way late in someone's life, right? And you sit there with the person and the family and try to piece it together at that time. I mean, how close to death can you work on the planning?
Well, not as close as you think. I mean, really, professionally, you don't want the beneficiaries to be part of it. It really needs to be just with the client, who is the person who has the assets. The family really is not supposed to be there. It's pretty important to do your estate planning while you still have your wherewithal.
Mm-hmm. And as people get older, they get more confused. So it seems premature probably when people start doing it, but that's the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you can always make changes.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not like that's a really difficult thing. It's really not.
Yeah.
And people do. A lot of times I see, you know, as they get closer to the end, okay, I want to do this, I want to do that. Or, you know, it's like, okay, you know, they have greater clarity or something has started to show themselves in terms of, oh, this child, you know, has a chemical dependency problem or this, you know, I mean, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Sure. If someone has nothing. So they have
over 166,000.
Yeah. Yep. They have nothing and they've written on a piece of paper somewhere in an envelope in their desk, this is what I want to have happen. And they think that that's a will and they think that that's what'll happen. How do you deal with those things? How do they deal with them?
Okay. Well, first of all, if you have written out in your own handwriting what you want to happen, that is considered a holographic will.
Okay.
It will stand up in court. It still will have to go to probate, but if it's in your own handwriting, that will work.
Okay.
And sometimes when I have people who are either going to take a trip and we don't have time to do an estate plan together, I say write out what you want in your own handwriting, particularly who you would want to be the guardians of your children. Because for younger people, that's one of their greatest concerns. I want it to be this family member, not that family member.
Yeah.
And so doing things in your own handwriting, you never want to type it and sign it. So everything has to be in your own handwriting. That's a holographic will, and that will stand up in court.
Okay.
So that being said, let's say they don't have that written down.
Right.
You know, if they have real property, you know, it's going to probably exceed the 166,000. And so it will end up going to probate and going to court. And so there will be a personal representative appointed by the court. And many times it's going to be the closest family member. And it depends, you know, but the court's going to be trying to make the best decision possible to have a reasonable person be the one who's going to manage this. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't mention that one of the deals with probate is it usually takes about 10% of the estate. So that's what would happen. And it's tedious, it's doable, but there's of course the drawdown on the value.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go into the medical power of attorney.
Okay. So the medical power of attorney, once again, is only active while the person's alive. Makes sense because
sure.
And that agent, they are really concerned with all the physical well-being of the person, mental well-being too, but really the physical part. And so, you know, whether or not the person, you know, is getting to the doctors, whether or not they're taking showers, whether or not they're eating right, when they are not able to speak on their own behalf, helping with the medical decisions with people who may have lost capacity, they are not making, you know, good decisions for themselves, stepping in and speaking on behalf of the person. So the skill sets that I think are important in this role are people who are more connected to you psychologically. They kind of know where you're at, where your heart's at, the value for you in terms of perpetuating your life or terminating your life, as well as being a person who can stand up in the face of either medical personnel pressure or other family pressure. I don't want you to pull the plug on mom. It's like, mom wouldn't want to live like this. And so it has to be a person who has a certain amount of strength of character as well as being kind of tuned into you psychologically about she's not happy, she's miserable, she wouldn't like this, and they can really feel your heart. And so that can be a different skill set than the people who handle the finances, attention to detail, follow through. It could still be the same person. And many times people with two children or one child who has some type of disability, you know, one child ends up doing everything. It's kind of nice to separate those roles if you can, because at the end of life, it's a lot to juggle. So it is good if you can spread it out over different children. But anyway, so the healthcare one is pretty much everything. You know, in all the roles that we've discussed so far, you always really want to be one. Mm-hmm. Just because it is good to let people have a voice, but it comes down to one person who has to, you know, pretty much live with that responsibility, what they decide to do. But mm-hmm. I think, once again, having that dialogue with siblings, other family members is a good thing.
Sure.
But you want to have backups for every role also.
Okay.
Yeah. It's because things happen so quickly in our lives. You know, people are traveling out of the country, or people have someone who has a illness in the family and it's taking their time for an in-law or however it might be, that you want to make sure that there's someone else who can step in. Mm-hmm. So it is good to have one or two alternates for every role. Okay. They don't need to have all the documents except for the healthcare one. But your successor trustee does need to make sure they have everything, a legal document.
Oh, yeah.
And these are just copies.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Well, Mart, I hate that our time is up because we could talk for quite a long time. I've learned a lot. Yes. And I appreciate you being able to kind of clarify it for me. You've always been able to do that for me in a number of different things. And I appreciate that. Anything else that's real important that you can think of?
You know, I think the only important thing is for people to not put it off until, you know, they become too fragile. And if they have family members who are fragile, to encourage them to also take care of it. Once, of course, you have a medical condition that arises, that's a real good motivator to go ahead and do something. But it's probably better something to address earlier on rather than wait and then do it under duress with you know, so many other pressures in life.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Marty, and I've been talking with Marty Dunlap. She's a lawyer here in Chico that focuses on estate planning.
That's right. And I should let you know that I have closed my practice as of the end of this year. It's true. I just want to focus on pro bono work now, but I obviously have knowledge, and I'm glad to be able to help you and your listeners to have a better understanding about estate planning and some of the details that go along with it.
Thank you so much, Marty.
You're very welcome, Bobby. Thank you for having me on your show.
You've been listening to an interview with Marty Dunlap about estate planning. Thanks for listening to KZFR and North State Give and Take. My name is Bobby Tryon. And if you'd like to hear it again, go to kzfr.org, go to Programs Tuesdays, and then go down to North State Give and Take. Stay tuned for Ginger and Radioactive.